left once we abandon the lie. Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. Is this off season tour? We don't know, because this is the For the Throne episode. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the hero of Game of Thrones. We haven't seen the last season yet, but we've seen most of it, so we know that the hero is obviously Littlefinger.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and obviously the hero of Game of Thrones is the Kingslayer himself, Jaime Lannister.
And I'm Neil Miller, and as predictions go, you guys know I'm very good at this, so I will tell you that in the final season of Game of Thrones, the hero will be revealed to be Ghost the Direwolf.
Ooh, after sitting out one whole season, comes back to
He's become
hero.
So much stronger. He's been doing a lot of, he got real into CrossFit.
Thrusts. All right, yeah, that's good.
He's doing dog CrossFit. It's great.
We are, of course, Storm of Spoilers, a Game of Thrones podcast. This week, we're circling back to talk about Game of Thrones. If you're listening to last week's episode, you might have heard us maybe front load this episode as being more about the movie Overlord that is currently out in theaters. I saw Overlord. I will definitely be telling you about Overlord in our other Game of Thrones or Beyond Westeros section of this week's podcast. But so much Game of Thrones news has hit since the last time we took some time out to actually talk about the show we all love and love to cover, Game of Thrones. That we are going to dedicate most of this week's podcast episode to that. If you are a donor to this show at patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the Maesters or Small Council level, you'll be getting a bonus segment this week where we fondly remember Stan Lee, who unfortunately died this week at 95 years old, which he led a very fantastical life in both pun-wise and not pun-wise, I guess if we're talking about a certain four.
Stan, listen. I mean, as lives go, Stan had a good one.
I mean, we're burning pot right now, but spoiler alert for our bonus episode, it will not be super sad for me because I think 95 is like a great, like, way to go. You know? 95, good job.
95 and still has movie appearances to come out in theaters. So immortal on screen.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah, he has to erase and then rewrite things for the next Avengers movie.
Like, that's right.
He snaps it back.
Snap back Stan Lee, this week's bonus episode. While we're talking about business, and before we talk about general Game of Thrones, guys, Con of Thrones is this year from July 12th through 14th in Nashville this year. It's obviously November of 2018, Dave. Con of Thrones is next year, July 12th through 14th, 2019 in Nashville. That is after the final season of Game of Thrones. We'll be there.
Doesn't it feel, though, like a calendar has been flipped?
It does feel like
the date of Game of Thrones. Like, so it's like, oh, well, that's this year now.
Yeah. So now it just feels like, you know, the real countdown to the meat of the year has started. But yes, Con of Thrones, tickets are on sale now, July 12th through 14th in Nashville. We'll be there. People from the show will be there. People from other podcasts will be there. We'll all have a lot of thoughts about the massiveness we've just seen and maybe some stuff about prequels. We'll see. That's all I have to do for this up top part segment. Joanna, do we have any reviews?
We do. We got our, you know, regular influx of foreign reviews this week from a service that I use. So I've just got a couple reviews from abroad that I would like to read. The first one comes from the UK. This is Will123, 5 stars, ruined by pews. Love this podcast. It's really enjoyable to listen to, but oh man, Joanna's pew 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 joke has gone way too far. Please stop. So.
No.
Someone doesn't like the pews. That's okay. Everyone's allowed to not like the pews.
It's just very unexpected take.
I might say my pews a little less confidence today. but yeah. All right. And then this one comes from KJNZ from New Zealand, 5 stars. And KJ, like, bless KJ's heart, started the thing saying, the review saying, if this is read on the show, no need for Joanna to attempt a Kiwi accent. Thank you. So KJ wrote, came for the Game of Thrones analysis, but stayed for the off-season tour. I don't have any recipes, but just wanted to thank you for the entertaining weekly pop culture discussion. A sign of a podcast working for me is when I am enjoying the conversation, even when I have not watched the topic being discussed. 5 stars. Do Dave or Neil, sorry, I just lost the review for a second. Do Dave or Neil greet visitors to their home by opening the doors saying hello and welcome? Long may a storm of spoilers continue. Hashtag already fell down 2018. I just wanted to check really quickly. Yeah, KJ Apa of Riverdale fame, aka Hot Archie Who Fucks, is also from New Zealand. So KJ from New Zealand, if you are actually KJ Apa, the actor from Riverdale from New Zealand, which you're probably not, but just in case you are, you know, crikey or whatever.
Yeah, then hello and welcome to my home.
Wow. For a second, I was not sure where this was going. This took a lot of turns.
I just also want to really quickly announce a couple of things. Obviously, our merch is still for sale, which you can find at chaosislit.com. We've got a couple shirts. You've got your hashtag don't fall down pin, just like some great stuff over there, including the Chaos is Lit shirt, which is my favorite personal fave. We also, you know, we have like new members every day on our Patreon Slack. We are so excited to have you. I like every time we have an influx of new, I was like, still people are still joining. So it's really exciting. Thank you guys so much for joining that community. I know that like there are some fun things planned for the holidays, including our movie club this month, which I believe I did not forgot to talk specifically about this off air with the guys, but we've talked about it a little bit in the Slack.
Ooh,
I think we're watching.
Is this going to be a surprise?
Well, I think we're watching like a I mean, obviously I'm going to let people vote because Dave insists on democracy, yawn, but like,
that's right. Don't you see what it just did for us?
but I think the theme we're going to go
I feel like jury's still out.
I think the theme, we're going to go for this month is, like movie turkeys, as in like bad movies. So we're going to pick like a really bad movie.
I think I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. So look for some options coming your way probably later this week. But that is what is going on with merch and reviews and our Slack community. Thanks so much.
I think Lady Terminator is on Netflix.
Hmm. Neil, your phrase, the jury's still out on democracy, is still bothering me. But like, that's how we deal with democracy, is with a jury. All right. No. Neil, guess what time it is?
Well, we're definitely running away from the courtroom and going into the storm.
Pew, pew, pew.
Wow. Really disappointing, guys. Really bad. All the way around. Which is why I'm going to go first in talking about the one movie, show, book, whatever, story. It could be anything. Mine is a show this week. It is the show Wanderlust, which is on Netflix. It's a new Netflix show. Knew nothing about it. Started watching it because I'm a Toni Collette completist.
Oh, nice.
And the more I watch of her, the more I remember that I like her. And then the braver I get, the more likely I am to watch Hereditary. So this is sort of a build-up process. But Wanderlust is actually quite good. It's about a woman who is a therapist, and she's having a little trouble with her husband. She and her husband not really feeling it anymore in the bedroom. So they decide to date other people, and they like talk themselves into it. And I've only watched a couple episodes, so I don't really know if it works out yet, but I'm very fascinated to see what happens. And I so far found the performances all to be just, great. Really great. Toni Collette. Always in Toni Collette.
Mm, yes.
So that's what I'm chasing this week. Joanna, what have, where hath thou gone chasing?
Well, this is my first season as a member of a critics group, which means I get to smugly say it's screener season, bitches.
You
Here's what's great about that.
Dave goes to the theater twice every weekend. We year part of the year.
So, given that it's screener season, I have been catching up on some films that I missed, in theaters. And one of them, which a lot of people talked about, and I was like, no way am I seeing this in theaters, is the Ethan Hawke film First Reformed, And I, you know, people have been so hyped on Ethan Hawke's performance in this film, which is directed by Paul Schrader. And I, written and directed by Paul Schrader. And I was like, yeah, I don't really tend to like angsty religious movies. Like, what was that one with Brendan Gleeson that came out a couple years ago? It just wasn't for me. It was like, I think it's called Coventry, but maybe not. But it was just like, basically like, I'm a priest and I'm conflicted and sad. And I was like, oh, I already saw it. I'm a priest.
Oh, the Brendan Gleeson one was,
it's not Coventry.
Cavalry.
Oh, Cavalry. There you go. Cavalry. like it was good, but like, I don't know. Anyway, because I'm an atheist, like maybe these things aren't for me, but people would not shut up about Ethan Hawke's performance of this. So I watched it. Guess what? Ethan Hawke is tremendous in this. So you should watch it. It's actually, it's really, really good and absorbing and upsetting. And, I really liked it and didn't think I would. So it's a little off our like standard, you know, see this Marvel movie sort of recommendation, but it is my recommendation right now. I really liked it. And I think Dave is going to like one up me, with what he has been chasing Stormwise. Dave.
Ooh, well, I don't, it's not necessarily a competition yet. But I, spinning off the Denver Film Festival, I believe I talked about The Favourite, last week. It closed out this week. I went to go see Roma, which was a special presentation. I bought tickets to it, even though it was opposite the only other screening of, If Beale Street Could Talk, because I didn't think I'd get the chance to see Roma in theaters. This is Alfonso Cuarón's new Netflix movie. It's a black and white movie. But if you do happen to see it in theaters, he's decided to have it in a 4K 70mm projection, with 7.1 Dolby surround sound or Dolby Atmos, just to have like this very pristine theatrical experience. Where I saw it was actually in the opera house, so they had to bring in speakers to put on the second level to create the correct points to balance the sound mix. Anyway, the movie itself is amazing. It's, I think like 2 hours and 15 minutes long. It tells the story of a family in Mexico City, and their live-in help in, 1970. And I don't really want to give away too much more than that because it's definitely a mood piece. And I do think we should talk about it more when it does come out on Netflix for everybody on December 14th. But it is such a beautiful theatrical experience. And then, like, especially after Cuarón did, like, Gravity, and you think that maybe he's, like, you know, pushed himself into the sci-fi sphere, the Children of Men Gravity sci-fi sphere, that, you know, it's all visuals, so who really cares if you're watching it on your giant home television or whatnot. This is a deeply personal movie that has a lot to do with naturalism and space, so I would really encourage you to try to see it in theaters. Netflix has realized its error since they programmed my film festival and decided they are going to try to release it in theaters. Unfortunately, they decided too late, and because of this very specific list of demands, and how long theaters would need to keep it in windows, they lost a lot of the chains, like the Alamo draft houses a lot around the world, just because the holiday movie schedule has happened. They have all their theaters booked. They don't want to boot something out. You know, they don't want to have one less Mary Poppins screen, so Roma could maybe pull some people in when it's already streaming on Netflix. So
tough
because
to get
of that,
in with all that Poppins hype.
That's right. There's a lot of Poppins hype. So here's, as of today, here's the official statement on Netflix with the Roma theatrical release. It will have exclusive limited theatrical engagements starting November 21st in Los Angeles, New York, and Mexico. Thank God, because it is very, should be seen there. Additional engagements in U.S. cities, Toronto and London, will begin November 29th, with other top U.S. markets and international territories continuing to roll out beginning December 5th. And that's all before the December 14th full Netflix release. So they don't know for sure what cities yet, but if you're close to a top U.S. market, if you're like a Atlanta or a Houston, you might still have a chance. Look at your local art theaters, either just November 29th and December 5th in the upcoming weeks. And if you can, please catch Roma in theaters. It's going to be so much better for you than trying to watch it on Netflix.
Damn, that's a strong recommendation, Dave.
Yeah. All right. I think that means that
I also smell a Quaroniverse.
Ooh, a Quaroniverse. That's good. Like, what if Sandra Bullock, you know, is one of the descendants of the child of men? I don't know. I don't know what that'd be.
And is also a little princess who wound up being the prisoner of Azkaban. Did I get that wrong?
Hey. You never
close
know.
Enough.
Cool. All right. Sweet. Good chasing.
That means it's time for Game of Thrones. Okay. My notes say Game of Thrones news rundown. What did George tell Joanna? That seems like that question is just meant to be asked as it is. Joanna, you've been talking to George?
I talked to George R. R. Martin. Sure did. He was super nice. He told me that it was snowing in Santa Fe and that, but probably the snow would be melted by tomorrow. That's something that George told me. No, I mean, we mostly talked about, I was talking to him, calling to talk to him about the Night Flyers, the new series of his based on his novella that will be on Sci-Fi. But like, as it turns out, George worked very little on that show. He has an exclusive deal with HBO. And so like Sci-Fi really only got that Night Flyers because he like made a movie out of it back in the 80s. And in that contract, like way back in the day, had TV rights in it buried in the contract. And so
smart.
Like, yeah. Universal dug it up.
Man. And shouts to the intern who found that one.
Exactly. It was like, we got it.
Did you know that's like the person George R. Martin like, thing.
Yeah. Or the guy who's like, let's put Jennifer Aniston on the cover of the first Troll movie. She's in it.
So the, yeah. So Night Flyers is happening. I'm excited. I think it'll be really fun. But like George barely worked on it. So, you know, he looked at the pilot. He gave some feedback. He had some notes on casting. We talked a little bit about Stan Lee because, Stan Lee had died that day, as we'll talk about a little bit later in the bonus podcast. And, you know, as it turns out, George R. R. Martin was like a huge Marvel fan, and his first, like the first time he was ever published was in letters to Marvel that he wrote as a teenager, dear Stan and Jack. So, that was a really fun conversation. He did not tell me when, The Winds of Winter is coming out. He did not even say I'm working on it, because I didn't ask about that. Though he, you know, he's been making the rounds publicity wise. And so he did talk to The Guardian, and he did give this very, like, I think the most transparent interview that he's ever given about, like how much he's struggling with Winds of Winter, which I was really appreciative of him saying that. And, you know, I think, you know, honesty and vulnerability can sometimes get us like just mocked to death online. So it's not easy to do, but I think a lot of us who support George really appreciate that transparency of not like just, I'm frustrated, I'm working on it, but like, man, this has been really hard for me. And I understand that like my fans want this and I'm having trouble delivering it. I think that's really, really eminently sympathetic. And he was like, it was much easier for me to just do this Targaryen history, which of course, like, so that's what he did. So Fire and Blood comes out next week, the 20th, I believe. My copy gets here tomorrow, so I'm really excited to,
oh, man.
To see what.
If ever there was a Storm of Spoilers humble brag.
I literally just emailed the publisher today, and I was like, oh, yeah, can I have this? And they're like, oh, we're overnighting it to you. And I was like, thanks, guys. I didn't expect them to give me an advanced copy, but apparently
I pre-ordered mine like a normal person on Amazon.com.
I mean, I would say, like, unlike you know, probably like I just assumed Fire and Blood they were going to treat that like they treated the Harry Potter books. Like I used to work in a bookstore when the last few Harry Potter books came out, and like we had them in like sealed cartons that we weren't allowed to open under penalty of death, and we had to like tarp the cartons in the back room. Like we had to put a tarp over the cartons in the back room, so that we didn't open the new Harry Potter book until like the moment of release. So for some reason I thought Fire and Blood was going to be treated that way, but like maybe The Winds of Winter will be, but no, they're like, sure, you can have Fire and Blood. I was like, okay. Anyway,
oh, so, this old thing through the air.
So yeah, so that's like, that's what, you know, George has been talking about. He also, you know, did a couple of posts on his own live blog. It looks like he got in a little bit of trouble with HBO for calling the prequel series The Long Night, when he's like, oops, my bad. It's still like, that's still just like a working title. And
they're like,
also,
oh shit, we haven't bought the web domain yet.
Right. Dave, get on that. And then also, for he, I think that he was saying that, or he has said that a couple of the not greenlit prequel series, at least two of them, are based on information from Fire and Blood, which I think George said so that he could sell more copies of his book. And who the fuck blames George for doing that? But I think HBO was a little irritated by that too. So he had to write like a mea culpa apology post about it.
Wait, you're telling me they want to do a dragon series?
I mean, they want to do something about Targaryens?
I want to put a bunch of hot blonde people on the screen. It's crazy.
So, yeah, so that's like that's some of the stuff that George told me and some of the stuff that George has been talking about generally.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of George lately.
I mean, outside of George specific news, Neil, I'll let you take this one. We got a very specific date that you alluded to earlier.
Yeah, take it away. April of 2019. April 28th, right? Is that correct?
Joanna did some math today.
Okay, explain the math. How did you get to April 28th? Because I didn't see that until you told me.
Joanna knows when True Detective is premiering, which everyone else knows too. And then she counted 8 Sundays from there. That's the end of True Detective. Joanna also knows Big Little Lies is airing between True Detective and Game of Thrones. She knows that for a fact. So that's 7 episodes, so she counted 7 Sundays from there, and then she got to April 28th. So the earliest it could go is April 28th. And it's in April, so it's April 28th. Yes. The only question mark is if they decided to like double up and do like an episode of True Detective and an episode of like the True Detective finale and the Big Little Lies premiere on the same night or something like that, which like maybe they would do, but other than that, I would say
pull a old 24. You do 2 hours of 24 and then 8 weeks of single week 24 and then 4 hours of 24 and then like 6 weeks of single week 24.
I'd watch 2 hours of Big Little Lies. I'm not going to lie to you. But usually in the past, when those of us who are trying to like suss out the Game of Thrones premiere date have done math, usually you have these like mystery Sundays in between seasons because like they take a couple Sundays off and they like air a documentary or something like that.
And it's usually around a holiday of some kind.
Right. But as, HBO's new overlords have made very clear, HBO is trying desperately to keep up with Netflix now, which means they no longer take Sundays off. And it's just going to be bam, True Detective, bam, Big Little Lies, then bam, Game of Thrones. So there we go. April 28th.
And then bam, more Game of Thrones. But later. So, okay, so April 28th is when we're going to get Game of Thrones Season 8. That's crazy. That is how many days from now?
I'm not doing that.
There's a website that has automated this process. Have we talked about on this show, I don't think we have, the Entertainment Weekly, like, little
166
tidbits.
Days.
Okay. Excellent. We are 166 days out from the final season of Game of Thrones. And no, all...
I was going to answer your earlier thing, which is no, we have not talked about the Entertainment Weekly behind the scenes report.
Excellent. There's some reporting. The most interesting question or the most interesting tidbit from the behind the scenes reporting, which didn't have a ton of stuff we hadn't speculated before about on this show when we'd talked about, an attack on Winterfell and sets being burned and whatnot. But the part that really stood out to me from that was apparently the final scene takes place somewhere that we haven't seen before, but that it could somehow be deduced by what we've seen.
Oh, man. Dave. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I mean, does yours start with a V?
V? No.
Then no. Then no. We're thinking different things.
Mine is the trident.
Oh, God, I hope it's the trident. Oh, God, Neil.
How did you
never mind my answer? I was thinking, like, I don't know, like old Valeria, weird, like, where would you have like a weird climactic scene?
No, it's going to be the trident. Because that's the thing that they talk about all the time.
Oh, my God, the trident.
The trident is where the final battle ends.
Neil, you just made me feel so good about myself and that piece. Yes.
I don't like showing my ignorance, but I'm going to show my ignorance. Where are you seeing in the CW report that their final scene takes place in a place we've never seen before?
Isn't that what he says? That he's surprised that two's there? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since I've read it.
Oh, no. He was surprised by who was there. But he was observing the final scene, and he was the Winterfell set. So,
That's less fun.
I'm happy to be wrong. I feel like I would have pulled that tidbit out when I wrote about it, and I didn't. Yeah. So,
I'm wildly Googling if you guys want to fill in some sort. Okay, so we know. I like the trident idea for obvious reasons. Character wise, we still have no idea. Okay,
here's the line that you're picking up. What's being filmed here is the episode. So he's at the Winterfell set, but he says, what's being filmed here is episode 6, the series finale, like Harrington going to the Table Read. I don't know anything about the final season storyline. I look around a meticulously constructed set that I've never seen on the show before. Several actors are performing and I'm stunned. There are characters in the finale that I didn't expect. I gradually begin to piece together what's happened in Westeros over the previous 5 episodes and try not to look like I'm freaking out. So there's a set that we've never seen before, but I think the location is Winterfell, but you might be right. It might be the Trident. But if it's a set, I don't think it's a Trident because it's outside, right? So.
Well, maybe. Like, what are they really going to... It depends what's happening there and whether or not you'd film it in a set. So assuming that you could only film, you know, practical things practically, so your big battles are going to have to take place somewhere around it. But then again, they like surrounded an entire lake with basically green screen last year, so who's to say? So he's at the Winterfell set when he's doing this. He describes a Winterfell set that's a lot more detailed than the previous Winterfell sets, because final season of Game of Thrones, plus lots of time spent at Winterfell, plus a large battle episode that's going to take place there.
Plus money, 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 money.
Right. So do we think that now with Joanna's exact quotation, I still want to be on Neil's side, but it sounds like it could be a new room in Winterfell.
A new room. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that basically saying that you're at the Winterfell set and that it's a new set, that could be literally any place where there's snow at that point. Like, we don't know necessarily that it's Winterfell that they're doing.
Which could
those sets could double, you know, you could be
right,
White Harbor, you could be...
Absolutely. And he's inside. So, like, maybe they, like, he watched, like, the final scene happen on this set that he's never seen before. And then later, like, you know, he's, like, strolling around the new Winterfell, is, like, wandering in a sprawling immersive medieval resort.
And you
resort.
Walk, like, 12 feet to the right, and there's Winterfell.
And there's Winterfell. So, like, maybe. Absolutely. The wording is very specific and interesting. Like, a set I've never seen on the show before is super interesting.
Right. And I'm taking all of these reports under the umbrella that this is the information HBO wants us to have.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is not George R. R. Martin giving
this isn't
titles.
Somebody who snuck into the set and is detailing what they watched. This is somebody who was invited there. This is a very specific story that they want to tell. And I would not put it past them to do weird stuff, like make it be that specific. So later they can be like, well, yeah, I mean, we were near Winterfell.
I think the only reason that stood out for me is that...
But it was really a snow-covered Storm's End.
I feel like that rules out any sort of like echo symbology, you know, like your Jack's open closing eye, right, or anything like that sort of that would bring the series to like a full circle sort of feeling or a full completion sort of feeling. That gets ruled out if we haven't seen this set before and if the characters are like sort of surprising, which is just interesting. Like, we don't know. Also, that also means it's probably not the throne room, which would seem like a logical place to end something called Game of Thrones.
Well, yeah, I mean, what it implies is a mystery, but what it's, you know, like, it's gonna be hard to figure out exactly where it was, but where it isn't is something we can know, because we've seen the inside of a bunch of castles.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
well, I guess, okay, so in my everything could possibly work at this thing, there could be a new seat of the Seven Kingdoms established at Winterfell, and that would be a throne room we'd never seen before.
That, yeah, it feels to me like a throne room for whoever is ruling. It's the new throne room, and it's not because maybe King's Landing has been burned to the ground. That throne room no longer exists. Which brings me back to, sorry, really quickly, can I just say that, like, we got the release date today. It's Tuesday. We got the release date today via this new campaign from HBO for season 8 called For the Throne, which is what, you know, Dave has titled this episode, I think. I think that slogan is bullshit. And I hate this campaign.
Is it misdirection?
It could be misdirection, but like, if it's misdirection, I think misdirection is kind of shitty and bullshit. But like, the idea of like what they released today was not new footage, but rather like all the best moments of the show. It's a way, you know, what I imagine is that HBO is scrambling to figure out a way to promote this show, just as James Hipper did when he wrote a cover story on the show, with as little information as possible about the new season, right? So they do a big ad release today that has no new footage at all. And their premise of it is, these are all the things that people did to get to the throne. And basically, it's like a greatest moments of Game of Thrones thing, except like repackaged slightly. And it's like, okay, but that frames the idea of the series as being like one long race to the throne, which I think we, those of us who chew over this, has been chewing over the show for years in, year out, gave up years ago. Like, that used to be the early years ad campaign where they put like all this, every actor like sitting on the throne. It's like, who will sit on the Iron Throne? And then years ago, we figured out like, that's not the story George seems to be telling. And it's certainly not the story that the show seems to be aiming for, is like, who sits on the Iron Throne. That's a misdirect. And the real point is this like other big battle. And so like, I mean, it's something that like the fans can latch on to. It might be something to like, you know, have us looking at in the wrong direction come the final season. But I find it so on brand for me. Wait. I find it slightly irritating for, you know, like last year's, slogan was Rally the Realm. And I think that's great. That, you know, last season was about rallying the realm. This is like, this should be called like the final battle or something, like, you know, it's not like the for the throne. I think that's stupid.
Honestly. Here's a question and a theory. This sort of ties into what we were just talking about, how, sorry, the, you know, like the final place of rule in Westeros could be somewhere other than King's Landing. What if For the Throne is like something that happens mid-season and it's like a revenge thing? Like, what if like King's Landing is destroyed and it's more of a rallying cry for humanity against the demon?
What if
zombie
do this for the guy who melted down that chair that we all like thought was stupid anyway? I mean, like,
does that make it better or worse?
I'm
still not sure.
I just don't think that like at least our heroes would ever say for the throne. You know what I mean? Like Cersei might. Cersei did everything for the throne, but like our heroes certainly didn't.
Ooh, but
you know?
What if what we're watching is Cersei's propaganda?
I love that idea, but that's a different ad campaign.
And we're in a very complex ARG.
I think that they had
like
a whole
resistance will rise up in like the coming weeks. We'll get like a message from Jon Snow about the resistance.
Didn't they do that? Didn't HBO do like a political campaign with like you vote for the different like people? Yeah. I think they did that in 2016, misguided. Like, all right, what?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, I was just saying they make a whole Anne campaign with the perfectly reasonable hashtag endgame, and then the Russo brothers were like, the fuck you don't say endgame in April of next year.
Yeah, that's another thing we should talk about. Dave, do you think they're going to move the Avengers and Avengers 4 date?
Because of this or just in general?
No, in general. So as of right now, if my math is correct, and April 28th is the premiere of Game of Thrones season 8, that Friday, so Sunday, April 28th, Game of Thrones season 8 premieres, that Friday, the 3rd, Avengers 4 comes out in theaters. So fuck you, everyone. But do you think it's going, like, a bunch of our listeners are pointing out that the Infinity War date got moved up a week? out of like concern over European spoilers, which I didn't remember, but do you think that the Avengers date is going to be moved? And if so, if it's moved a week into April or May, into April, that puts it even closer to the fucking Game of Thrones premiere date. So.
Yeah, I mean, moved up a week is much more likely than pushed back at all, because it has to precipitate a ton of other movies this thing.
Yeah.
So it's like it's got to push off Spider-Man like immediately. But that being said, I would say that if it is going to move up a week, we would know that immediately after Captain Marvel. If Captain Marvel goes gangbusters, there's a cliffhanger at the end. Disney thinks they can get away with it and want to avoid spoilers really bad. They'll pull the trigger and move it up a week. But yeah, they don't care about HBO.
So what might happen is that Avengers 4 comes out on like the Friday or the Thursday midnight or whatever. And then Game of Thrones airs that Sunday. So
yeah, it's gonna be a fun weekend. It's gonna be where all of my money just goes right out the door.
Bad times at the El Royale is what it's gonna be. But
I feel like it'll only be bad for like people like us. Everyone else is going to have a great time.
I guess Marvel and Game of Thrones both hitting, like, you remember the monoculture, Neil?
Dave,
that's what this feels like.
Have you heard of people who don't cover pop culture? They just, like, they go to the movies and then they go home and do other stuff. And then on, like, Sundays.
Other stuff?
Like, on the Sundays, they, like, do stuff. And then they're like, oh, shit, Game of Thrones on 10 minutes. And they sit down, they watch it, and then they get up, and they have a smoke, and they go do something else.
Wow, that sounds dreamy. Sounds like the life.
I would say that there are probably more of them than there are of us.
We are literally Legion. No, we're not. Endgame. Dave. Endgame would be a great slogan, even though you're just predicting now that that's the name of the Avengers 4 movie, was your point before I went off.
But also, it does feel very early. So, do you think this probably isn't the slogan they take into the season?
I think it is. I think they're making MetroCard. It's like a whole, hashtag. Yeah, I think it is for the
thread. Wow.
I think so.
That makes it a lot worse in my mind. Cause if this was like, okay, we're going to roll out like a 3-stage thing where we have like, you know, we got 6 months left. We're going to do it 2, 2, 2, and 2. This could be a good start, is reminding people what Game of Thrones has been all about previously. But if this is it, like, I mean, come on, guys. Let's go. I mean,
it's in their Twitter bio. I mean, like, it's in, like, if you go to the Game of Thrones Twitter account, For the Throne is the banner image, and then for hashtag For the Throne is the description on the Game of Thrones page.
Well, and that's the hashtag that brings up the icon. So right.
Well, and I don't remember, like, was there last year like a season's slogan? They did that rewatch though. Remember? Wasn't there a different hashtag for that?
I don't know.
Maybe, but that's like a marathon.
Yeah.
I feel like we had our ice moment, and it's fight for the throne.
Oh, okay.
We're post ice now. But
I mean, it's pretty bad if this is like the only, this is the best one they could come up with for season 8, then yeah, that's bad.
Well, we were talking about that towards the end of last season, how fun it would be if this season like only dealt with the big White Walker fight for like 3 or 4 episodes, and then like gave us a long period of time to let everything settle. Maybe at the end of this season, we'll feel better about For the Throne, but it is very puzzling now, because there's like a huge war. Nobody's doing anything for the throne except maybe Cersei.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because it's hard to know what's going to make it into the show. Cause if you think about how they've sort of squished and squeezed, we've already seen probably what would you say, Joanna, like half of what's going to be in Winds of Winter at this point? Like,
I mean,
in theory.
On honestly, who knows what's going to be happening?
That's true. But if George had kept the pace and sort of kept the story to where he had originally sort of planned with the seven books, not the original plan, I know, before anybody tweets right. me. but if you think about the seven book plan, you know, reasonably, we're probably about halfway through Winds of Winter. So you have another half of the sort of winter themed book, assuming that the season thing is a real thing. And then there's a whole book called A Dream of Spring that the show will be using the plot points from. So I think where you have to start is that condensed, like seven book, seven season plan that they probably laid out at the very beginning. Cause that's what Weiss and Benioff were working on. Like, George now is in a different universe. Like, he has traveled to a new continent.
Yep.
And he's just, his brain is all over the place. I have theories about George. I'm going to write that in a Patreon column this week. But,
no, I mean, like,
George is off doing his own thing. So, we still do know sort of what Weiss and Benioff are working off of.
Yeah, I don't
sort
know.
Of.
I don't like necessarily disagree with you. I just find it hard for myself to speculate like what was ever in the books and how it compares to what Weiss and Benioff have put up there.
Yeah.
Hopefully someday George will tell us, you know, like, well, my original plan was to do this and that's what Weiss and Benioff were working on. But then I changed my mind and decided to do this and that's what my book is about. You know, like, I hope that comes out someday. I hope that Charlie Jane Anders, formerly of IO9, like writes a big thing because, no one talks to George the way that Charlie Jane does. So like, that would be my preference of how I get that like compare contrast situation. But like, I don't know what George had.
Yeah, because the essential question is how much of
there's so much like the chapter.
How much of spring are we going to get in the final season?
I mean, what I think would be cool, but what's interesting is like the chapters that George has read from Winds of Winter have all been these like these character like you know have Victorian chapter right and like all these characters who aren't even in the show. So, like, there's all this story, like, the story that George has revealed, you know, like, Sansa at, you know, the Eyrie, like, a different Sansa entirely from who's in the show. And so all the stuff that George has revealed has nothing to do with the show, so, like, comparing and contrasting is especially difficult at this point. But, like, I think it would be really cool if, the way that George paced it, and I don't know how he gets there, but like if George paced it so that the final conflagration between the realms of men and the Night King, who's not even been introduced in the books really, if that happened at the end of Winds of Winter and then A Dream of Spring is just the political aftermath, I think that would be really cool.
That's sort of the expectation. Yeah.
Well, that was sort of, well, I mean, a dream
well,
of spring
or
is something.
The hope, I guess.
A dream of spring is something you can have in the winter. You could be in the dead of winter and dreaming of spring, right?
That's
so,
true.
But, you know, I think that's sort of what we hoped would happen in Game of Thrones, the final season, season 8. We hoped that like the big battle would come earlier in the season and the rest would be the political fallout. But, the EW report kind of, scuppers that. Like the big battle is at the end, where you would expect to find it. We were kind of hoping it would defy expectations in that way, but no, it's where it should, you know, it's where
yep, the almost final had it.
Happens. So, well, yeah.
I'm still hoping for a really grounded final episode then. Just let it, everybody rides horses and it takes them a long time to get there. Just remember what this season was or what the show was in the first season, where it was largely about a caravan down to the other city. Yes.
Well, yeah. I want to mention like a couple other things we learned from that EW report, which are really fun. Like, first of all, that the opening of season 8 is Daenerys and Jon arriving at Winterfell in a thing that is supposed to evoke that arrival of Robert Baratheon to Winterfell in season 1. So that's going to be really fun. Like,
which means horrible wigs.
Hopefully horrible wigs, but my palms are already itchy to like make the comparison gifs. Like, I think it's going to be really fun to do that. Something I'm less excited about is that Hibbert confirmed sort of our worst fears of the snippet of footage that we did get from season 8, which is Sansa looking suspiciously over Jon's shoulder. And Hibbert says in his report that like Sansa and Daenerys will be at odds at least in the beginning of the season. And that's just, I just want to root for Sansa. And I don't like this shit.
What it sounds like is they're just going through the greatest hits. Like, season 8 is going to be the greatest hits of Game of Thrones. Remember when all the women hated each other? And like,
you liked that, didn't you? No. you know, hopefully they'll come to an understanding by the season's end. But like, I feel like we spent all last season being like, people being like distrustful of Daenerys. I just like, I don't need that.
Well, again. And we spent all last season of people, Sansa and Arya being distrustful of each other. So there's just a lot of,
or pretending to be distrustful of each other.
No, I hated that plot. That's not, they were only pretending at the very end.
Which is dumb.
Let's not retcon the whole season. Okay. Hibbard wrote, you know, and like, you know, I have my criticisms in the past of Hibbard's coverage, but like, you know, I know he's only allowed to reveal exactly what HBO lets him reveal. So like, we shouldn't give him too much of a round of applause for like, you know, being a mouthpiece, but like, he had to write a whole feature on like three pieces of information they let him share. So like, I have the feature writer in me is a little bit of sympathy for him, or for having to do what he had to do here. But he says, the story mentions that Martin envisioned an epic final battle that's been teased from the show's very first scene, which is a fun line. And so like, the show's very first scene is everyone's favorite asshole, Waymar Royce, going north of the wall and encountering the others. So like, whether or not that's just like a clash with the others, I don't know. It would be lovely if something more specific from that very first scene were like involved.
It's just going to be a giant field. Corpse spiral horse heads.
Bring back the corpse spirals.
It's going to be the very Godfather moment.
And then,
it'll be after they think they've gotten rid of the Night King. They'll be like, oh, we got him. And then the next day they'll wake up and it's corpse spirals everywhere.
I mean, I love a corpse spiral. And then I want to say something really encouraging of that Benioff said. I felt seen in this moment, where like, there's so much hype in this Entertainment Weekly article about how big the final battle is, how they spent over 2 months shooting it, how many horses, how many people, blah, 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 which is something we've heard Entertainment Weekly report year after year. This year, the battle's even bigger. And I love that Benioff is like, that's boring. He was like, let me find the exact quote. He was like, having the largest battle doesn't sound very exciting. It actually sounds pretty boring. Something Benioff says. And I love that because like, I agree. Like, I mean, you know, spectacle is fun, but like, what I always say is like, just having the biggest is not what makes something interesting. And so Benioff, I feel like in this moment, Benioff is promising to me, some good, like, Battle of Blackwater style human drama to go with, like, you know, the big giant undead zombie giants.
And you know what? I feel like they tested it and proved it in season 7 when they did the loot train. Like, they tested the idea of like, can we bring perspective and human drama to a situation where like, everybody's favorite people are all on different sides. And so that is like doubly encouraging that it's like, okay, well, they've obviously, they don't care necessarily about the size of the battle. It's how they use it. So that's good.
First of all, I'm a little disappointed in you, Neil, that you've swallowed the loot train.
I know.
Yeah, I know. There's no other like casual common way to reference it. You just kind of have to call it what people know it as.
If you called it the Field of Fire, I would know what you're talking about. Or you call it by, I'm okay with the episode title, which is Spoils of War, but
I don't know.
Loot Train makes my head itch, but
to me it's become ubiquitous enough. It's like if you came to Texas and asked for a soda pop, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. Like, it's just not. So I guess it has to be the Loot Train.
Says you, I will stand firm on this account. No, but I agree with you. The fight between Jaime and Daenerys was like so good until that like stupid ending, which was just like so not good. And everything after it was so not good. But it was like 90% so good. And if they can capture more of that, and like, you know, all credit to, it was Adam Shankman, right? Shankman?
Matt Shankman.
Matt Shankman. All credit to him. I mean, Miguel Sapochnik's our dude. So, you know, yeah, give me that Hard Home. Give me that Blackwater. Give me that Spoils of War. I will be there for you. So, as I say in the Friends theme song. So that
Fields of Fire.
That's all of the, I think that's all of the season 8 stuff that we know. I mean, we've heard some like hype stuff from other people, but I think that's the main stuff. Do we want to talk at all anymore about the prequel stuff? I don't know.
I don't think there's enough necessarily to add to that we haven't. This is the Jane Goldman Long Night, but not called that, probably not bad George R. R. Martin. I think that's circle around time.
This is the one with Naomi Watts in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's playing, and so
we don't know.
She's playing like a socialite, they said. So yeah, yeah. And we're not entirely sure where it takes place. I mean, it involves the events of the Long Night, so obviously, there'll be some North stuff. I guess my question with these is, what's the geographical scope of these prequel shows? Like, is it going to be as expansive as Game of Thrones? Like, are we going to have characters from, you know, the East? Or are we going to have characters from Dorne? Like, is it, because I remember we talked about this before, right? And we said maybe she's playing like a Lannister. But
right.
My question is, are the prequels going to have the same like largeness scope of Game of Thrones? Which I think is fascinating.
I think even more. I think that they have mentioned specific locations that we have. I think they mentioned like Shai and stuff like that. Like mentioned like specific locations we haven't even seen in the show. So, and I know they're casting a more diverse roster. So I think they want to do more Eastern stuff, you know, than before. We did talk a lot about this before. The main reason I wanted to bring it up is to call out the other actor who's been cast who we've not talked about, which is Josh Whitehouse or Josh Whithouse. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. He's played guys with northern accent, thick northern accents, in other things that he's done. I think he's in something called like Northern Boy or something like that. So people are thinking like he looks very, like he might be very Starkish. So if she is Southern and Lannister-ish, he is Northern and Starkish. That's just the added thing that I want to talk about.
Ooh, maybe they'll fall in love. That's the only thing two people of opposite sex do.
He's quite a good deal younger than her, but I'm still down for that. So,
listen, it's what Cersei's ancestors would have wanted her to have. It's what they would want to do. Mm. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense for Lannister.
I'm going to do a last call on tidbits about Game of Thrones before we move on to our Beyond Westeros segments.
It's fair.
Anyone? We good? We good?
I don't think I know anything else about Game of Thrones that would be worth sharing at this point.
Now that my mind has this trident idea, I'm going back to that over and over, but we don't need to do that out
listen,
loud.
Listen, I want it to be true for you. I really do.
Thank you. Hashtag trident truthers.
The last tidbit that I will share is that, there's a couple other actresses, including Sheila Ashton and Denise Goff, who are in talks to be it, in the thing. One is a white blonde lady, another is a woman of color. For the young woman of color's role, apparently Letitia Wright from, Black Panther was in early talks for the role, but dropped out. So,
what I love about it is that these prequels are going to give the opportunity for every British person to be in a Game of Thrones thing. Every British and Australian person.
It'll be like,
eventually we'll have the Nicole Kidman one. You know that's coming.
It'll be like, Harry Potter, where it's like faster to say which British actor hasn't been in Harry Potter.
Exactly.
But yeah, so, you know, apparently 6 lead roles are supposed to go to people of color. That's, pretty cool. And we will see what happens. The the Denise Goff, who's an actress, the other actress that they're considering, I just saw her in the Keira Knightley film Colette, and where she plays this like sort of trans lover of Keira Knightley. Very cool. Just I guess if we want to typify people, this would be your like sort of Brienne of Tarth kind of person. Like, pretty cool. So, I don't know. Anyway. All right. Let's thank you, Dave, for keeping us on schedule. Let's move along.
It's that time of the episode where we get to read off the small council members who make this show possible. I want to thank this week Matthew Prater, Seth Pollock, Brianne Polito, Amber Palace, Gina Perry, Danielle, Taja Pender, Chuck Parkley, Parkey. I didn't want to add L there. That's not my place. Chuck Parkey, Chelsea Paschel, Luigi Oswego, Heather Ogden, Brian Ohem, yes, Shane O'Reilly, Ben O'Gorman, Georgia O'Brien, Shosave O'Dally, Savio Nguyen, Wynn, Will Nazer, Del Nakamura, Samba Muteba, and Natalie Muskin-Press.
All right, and I also, you're not going to believe this, have a list of people that I would like to thank this week. And it starts with Brian Morawski, Mike Moody, Delaine Mitchell, Manu Mishra, Chris Miracle, Megan Meyer, Megan McLeod, Kelsey McKinnell, Matthew McKee, Wade McFarlane, Summer McCusker, Marcus Masciarelli, Adrian Martinez, Fanny Martin, Vanessa Marshall, Brandy Mandato, Liz Major, Christopher McGrain, Ryan M., Elisa Love, Shirlene Love, and Vince Lewis.
Thank you guys so much. And my last section of names goes something like this. Kwang Yu Liu, Gretchen Lindensmith, Lily Lim, Jessica Lair, T. Ledieu, Hyung Lee, Joshua Lane, Jocelyn Land, Erica Kremenak, David Koplos, Andrea Kodike, Christina Klein, Crystal Kirk, Christine Kippens, Crystal Kennel, AJ Cavage, Anna K. Jackson, Felix Jazz, Dan James, Joe Jaka, and Greg Yeager or Jaeger. Thank you guys so much. And just so you guys know, we're noodling a new system for the names. So thank you so much for bearing with. Our small council has grown to be not so small, and we're really excited to have all of you.
And we're back for the back half of our Game of Thrones episode. I say back half like it's going to be half. It's not. We're going long. I'm going to limit this like some sort of person who makes trains run on time. Is that the conductor or is that a governor? Doesn't matter. All right.
It's Mussolini, I believe. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that like a fascist?
Well then, in the spirit of Mussolini, this is Beyond Westeros. We're each going to recommend another piece of media that has somebody from Game of Thrones in it, and by recommend, maybe just point you in the direction of Neil. Why don't you kick us off?
Well, yeah. So as soon as we found this prompt, I went against the rules, obviously, broke the rules immediately and was like, hey, what are some of the movies coming out that we haven't seen or talked about or even seen trailers for? And so then it just started to pile on. And then also today it was announced that Pedro Pascal, who is a Game of Thrones fave, as you may know, is going to be starring in The Mandalorian. And and that's a Star Wars thing for those who don't know.
I love saying The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian.
Because like, we grew up like saying DeLorean so often.
So here's, here's a question. I can't remember who asked me this today, but they said, who was the Fetts? Boba Fett? Jango Fett? Were they Mandalorian or were they just using the Mandalorian armor?
I think Jango Fett was actually a Mandalorian.
I'm trying to get a sense of like, where's Pedro going with the accent?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because he's Kiwi, right? The guy who played Jango?
Mm-hmm. But I do believe that, so even though all the clones inherited that Kiwi accent, the Mandalorians are much more like an ethnic group. It's like calling a series the Italian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The actor who played Jango is Temuera Morrison.
He's from New Zealand.
Yeah, sure is. He's the father in Moana. But yeah, I just want Pedro. Like, I don't know if it's like, I mean, I can ask a Latino right now. Dave, is it offensive for me to want Pedro to put on his Dornish accent, even though that's not what he sounds like normally?
No, I don't think so. It's Star Wars, so it's like, unless you're doing something that's like super racial stereotypy, and even when you are, a la Watto, you could kind of get away with it.
I mean, I just kind of want
Star Wars
to have,
is the safe place for bad accents.
I kind of want, I want Pedro to always use that accent in every acting job he has, and I feel bad about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's got to do one, because he can't be like Surfer Bro Pedro. He's got to do some kind of accent. So we either got to get, we got to get Oberyn, maybe we get Narcos. We should definitely not want Kingsman 2.
It wasn't that bad. It was like a Southern thing. I didn't hate it.
I don't know. So anyway, so The Mandalorian, very exciting. That's the one Jon Favreau is doing, right?
Yeah, it comes out next year. It's already been shooting for a few weeks, but we just learned, obviously, today, and it was confirmed, they were shooting without their lead. So who knows what they've been shooting, but...
Well, I mean, we've seen photos of the whole suit, so, like, I feel like they could just shoot a bunch of stuff of, like, his stunt double.
Yeah, they could shoot second unit stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, they could just shoot everything in the suit. Like, they don't need Pedro for that.
Well, also, we don't know how hard it is.
He's over it anyway.
In that time period to get a Mandalorian suit. So it's very possible that, you know, the Mandalorian doesn't have the Mandalorian armor for a while. Just saying. It took us 3 movies to get to Darth Vader, and it seemed like becoming Darth Vader would only take 1 movie. So Star Wars can draw stuff out for a long time.
When is this due into the Disney streamings? Next year?
Next year.
Late
Disney
2019,
streaming. Yeah.
So, but probably before... the movie, so we're early fall type of thing.
I would guess yes. They have to, if they're gonna spin up, they have to spin up, you know, marketing again after their year off somehow. I would expect Disney Plus to really do that, and also to try to draw people to the service without highlighting the fact that Disney Plus will not have the streaming rights to the 20th Century Fox movies either. So. You want to get them back into Star Wars, but you only have so much Star Wars. I think it'd be a good time to drop it before the movie.
Makes sense. Okay, the other two that I wanted to run off real quick. One is a movie called Welcome to Marwen, which comes out in December.
Sorry.
Did you see the documentary? I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's a tough story.
No, but it's not that. It's like the documentary is good, but the live action movie looks so terrible. Okay, sorry.
Well, it's a Robert Zemeckis film. It's got a great cast that includes Gwendolyn Christie.
When's the last time you enjoyed a Robert Zemeckis film?
Enjoyed is a weird word to use. I was affected by The Walk. Right? He did The Walk?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably it. Cool. For the last couple of years.
I think Zemeckis has lost his mind.
Like, is he washed? Zemeckis is washed.
I think he's lost his mind to like the world of special effects. You know what I mean? Anyway, sorry.
Fair enough.
Which is why he needs to do a Who Framed Roger Rabbit 2.
I was trying to say is that there is a movie coming out that has Gwendolyn Christie and Janelle Monáe. And I think that people should at least give love a chance here. So... That's all I have to say about that one. The other one was, I did not know this, but Brian De Palma has a new movie. It's supposed to be coming out in 2018, but it's not, we haven't really heard about it in a while. It hasn't played any festivals, but it does star both Nikolai Coster-Waldau and Carice Van Houten in very highly billed roles. I don't know. It's called Domino, but I don't think it's about the comic book character Domino. So it's been a while since I've seen a good Brian De Palma movie, and every time I see Jamie Lannister on screen, it's pretty good. Like all of his other movies are, I will say, especially with like that shot collar prison movie he made last year. It's always a little bit better than I think it's going to be when I see a movie with him in it that's not a Game of Thrones thing. It's always just a little bit better than you think it's going to be. Like, I thought that shot collar movie was going to be terrible, and it was okay.
All right, so Neil's holding out hope for future Game of Thrones properties.
Not following the rules at all, sorry.
Joanna, you've got one people could watch right now from their homes.
I do. This is a film that came out, dropped on Netflix last weekend, and it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. It is Outlaw King, starring Chris Pine as Otto the Bruce. Sorry, I apologize for that. Anyway, so what's
interesting... Wait, is that the accent that he puts on in this movie? I haven't even watched a trailer yet.
My accent is at least as good as Chris Pine. No, his accent is surprisingly fine. He's actually fine. I was really worried about it. His mullet is crisp. His accent is fine.
And I've heard that his clothes are also off at one point.
I don't think... You blink and you miss his penis, I'm telling you. It's not... Don't go in expecting the world. This is from, director David McKenzie.
That's an interesting way to start a date. Don't go in expecting the world.
Who people have liked for his work on Hell or High Water. Startup is another movie he made that I really, really loved. Much more. And so this is the story of Robert the Bruce, sort of like what happened after William Wallace was assassinated and sort of the other Scottish effort for independence. But the reason I bring it up in this context is there are no fewer than 7 Game of Thrones actors in this film. It got like sort of tepid reviews at Toronto, but then Netflix let David McKenzie cut 20 minutes out of the movie. Like, he basically had to rush the film to show it at Toronto.
Yes, like, I read about this from our friend David Ehrlich.
I also read about this from our friend David Ehrlich on
excellent
Anywhere.
Piece of journalism.
It's a really good story. It's not the only... There's, like, it was covered in a couple different outlets, so I'm not just licking David Ehrlich's boots, but, David McKenzie, I think, is...
Don't let it go to your head, Ehrlich. Who's probably never listened to our podcast.
Dude, at least never listened to like a podcast, let alone ours. certainly doesn't listen to his own. But David McKenzie was given the opportunity to cut 20 minutes off. And so like this movie that I think a lot of people were not that interested in at Toronto turned out to be something a little bit better on Netflix. I actually quite enjoyed it, you know, especially like as, you know, something I watched at home. So like a fine time at the home movies. But anyway, to get to the Game of Thrones people, we've got Stephen Delane, who you might know as Stannis Baratheon, the One True King, playing another bastard king, Edward Longshanks. So if you've been wanting to see a crown on Stephen Delane's head, this is your opportunity.
Just imagine he's Book Stannis.
Yes, obviously. The the great James Cosmo, who I like so much, who is not only in this and in Braveheart, and in the, he plays Fodder Coram in the upcoming His Dark Materials, so I'm really into all of this. You might know him as the Old Bear, Jorah Mormont from Game of Thrones, but he's got a pretty good role in this as Chris Pine's father. Clive Russell, the Blackfish himself, has a fun little part. And I also recognized, Ron Danicki, or Danashi, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but he played, who was his name? His head got struck off. Roderick Cassell. So Sir Roderick's in this as well. And then a bunch of other people, including Jory. So like, there's a bunch of Game of Thrones people in this. This is a very Game of Thrones movie. Like, I do this sort of like Ren Faire camping thing, and I've never seen a movie that is like more Ren Faire camping than The Outlaw King is, because everything is just like muddy and dirty and like cold, and that's kind of what Ren Faire camping is. But the clothes are beautiful. This also features the film also features how do you think we pronounce Florence
Pugh's? I thought it was Pugh.
I think it's Florence Pugh. Pugh. Florence Pugh, who was so great.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. So great in Lady Macbeth last year, is really good as Chris Pine's wife. Okay, that's it.
Elizabeth.
This is a film that I really enjoyed. And if you're looking for something to watch on Netflix, which aren't we all always at every given moment, and you want your Game of Thrones fix, I really recommend The Outlaw King. But Dave, I understand that you finally saw something that Neil and I saw a couple months ago and we were like, eh, and you saw it. Now you're like, eh, so tell us about it.
Yes, it's Overlord, which has,
Captain. I feel like I was slightly higher than an eh. An Overlord?
I wouldn't step that forward, Neil, until you hear what I have to say. Has Pilo Aspic, Pirate Pacey, he's in it as Discount Michael Shannon, Nazi captain who is running...
Oh, that's good.
He's running experiments in Nazi-occupied France in 1944, and Discount John Boyega has to stop him. The movie is not good. If you watch the trailer, you have seen everything you need to know about this movie. If for some reason you are a 9-year-old boy and are unfamiliar with what a grindhouse movie is, where they take like a B concept that seems really stupid on paper and then just translate it to a movie where all the sets are small, they all sort of look like Universal backlot sets, the makeup effects are good, but they use blood and burn char to cover the makeup effect lines and then augment them with CGI so then you can't really tell what's good and what isn't. This is a perfectly serviceable movie that for some reason was made by fucking bad robot. So it begins with a gigantic CGI plane sequence and then has a big runaway while the thing blows up sequence at the end, but otherwise could have been perfectly fit into like this, you know, $9 million movie made by people who actually cared about it. Feels like a cash grab. Skip Overlord. And that is our Beyond Westeros segment. we don't need to. You guys talked about it.
Presented without requests for comment.
Yeah, no, you guys can go see it in theaters now if you want to do this, or if I said you are a boy of a certain age that is unaware that these type of movies exist and have been made better and sometimes even get to say things thematically instead of just being about Nazi zombies. Also, I'm not sure if the thing that separates us from the Nazis is they're willing to be more brutal is like a great Nazi message to put into 2018. I think like that's a little too unnuanced for the nuance of our Nazi reality. Overlord, skip it. All right, Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh man, I'm still reeling from that whole rant you just did.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Oh no, wait, we're doing the Harry Potter thing next week. It's the annual Gecko Scamander War Commander Memorial episode where we talk about Fantastic Beasts and the crimes of Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't want to go see a Johnny Depp movie this weekend, we support you in that. So just
we'll go see it so you don't have
to. Yeah, we'll go see it. I'll go see it for free because, you know, the studio's showing it to me and I won't pay a single red fucking cent to see it. And then I'll come and tell you what it was about so you don't have to go see it if you don't want to. Or you can go see it and we'll talk about it, you know?
I'm going to make MoviePass give it to me for free.
Ooh, nice. I'm going to say preview. If you would also like to hear me maybe rant about maybe take your themes of fascism more seriously, you motherfuckers, tune in next week. Just saying, we had an election. I came out of the fire forged like steel. I'm harder. I'm pointy. I'm angry. I can't wait for Game of Thrones to come back.
What is dead may never die.
That is right.
But rises stronger and harder and faster.
Exactly. Hashtag for the throne, I guess.
Hopefully didn't
whatever.
Drown. Stronger, we tried to drown.
Harder.
we tried to drown him, but he came back, so I guess he's our leader now.
So until next week when we have to hard pivot back into the wizarding world of of J.K. Rowling, where can people find more of your work? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on Twitter at It's Rolling, or you can hear me on Vanity Fair's podcast, Little Gold Men Are Still Watching, or you can read me over on VanityFair.com.
And Neil Miller.
You can get me over at hashtag Pedro Do the Sexy Accent. You can get me on FilmSchoolRejects.com. Get the whole show, this show, at Storm Spoilers. And if you have things to tell us, you can still, in this day and age, email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spelled my first name D-A-7-E, which is really weird for somebody who keeps pronouncing people's last names exactly how they're spelled. You could see my other podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. And until next week, I am urging you still to not fall down or see Overlord.
Now we're all settled in and sorted, I'd like to make an announcement. This castle will not only be your home, but home to some very special guests as well. You see, Hogwarts has been chosen to host a legendary event. Let me be clear. Chosen, you stand alone. And trust me when I say, these contests are not for the faint-hearted.